Welcome to Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped, and yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. This is Dreamland. Sunday evening, and indeed this is Dreamland. Good evening, everybody. I am Art Bell, and we've got, I think, a very interesting show this evening. As usual, Linda Howe, she tells me she's got quite a report for you this evening. Linda Howe, generally regarded across the world as the preeminent expert, I guess, in crop circles, animal mutilations, and their connection to UFOs. So we'll do that, and then we'll follow it with John Rhodes. John Rhodes has been investigating the human-reptilian connection. And aside from knowing some individuals that I might put in that class, or at least descended from that class, I don't know very much about the subject. He will also talk to us about underground bases a little bit. Now, that would certainly make sense if you're talking about the reptilian connection, I guess. At any rate, we will explore all of that this evening, so I'm looking very much forward to it. And in just one moment, Linda Howe. And he got a letter from John Rhodes, and I'll read to you in part what he said. Art, in recent years, I have been researching and lecturing about UFOs, underground bases, and occulted archaeology. I've also placed the emphasis in my research on the connection between the ancient and intelligent bipedal race of serpent beings called reptilians and human beings. These investigations have yielded numerous religious, cultural, and genetic links that provide extremely compelling evidence to the fact that we are genetic descendants of a highly technologically advanced race of alien reptilian beings living on our planet. Now, that ought to be tease enough for you, and I'll add a little something to that. I've received information from a number of guests that we are going to book in the future that also maintain that if not reptilian, certainly there has been a very advanced, and there is evidence of, a very advanced civilization that has lived here on Earth previously. And that's always interesting since we're here now, and I assume we'd prefer not being relics of some future civilization's examination. So we'll get all into that in a moment.
With Art Bell. It is the CBC Radio Network.
It is indeed, in one moment, the human-reptilian connection. And I think most of us would like to hope there isn't one. And now, coming from not very far away, actually, Henderson, Nevada, here is John Rhodes. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Art.
It's good to have you.
It's good to have you, too. And by the way, happy birthday. I got wind that it was your birthday on Saturday.
It was, indeed. Oh, it was a wonderful birthday, John.
Great.
Wonderful. John, I don't know where to start. Tell us a little, if you would, about yourself, I guess, first.
Okay.
Who is John Rhodes?
John Rhodes is a gentleman of about 34 years of age. When I was younger, I lived most of my life overseas. My parents were, one was a swimmer, my mother, and my father was a pilot that used to work for Air America, which was an old CIA operative.
That's right.
And I had the opportunity as a child to live a lot of different places overseas, including Vietnam when I was 6, 7, and 8, and over in the Middle East in Beirut, Lebanon. And then I came back to the United States here, of course, completed my education. And it wasn't until about 5 or 6 years ago I started getting interested in what was going on as far as the UFO field and unexplained phenomenon, because I felt that there was just something that wasn't right as far as the reality in which we were living.
Well, you heard me say, I'm sure a little while ago, I've had a lot of guest information lately from people who have been studying for some time the possibility that a civilization existed here on Earth long before we ever did, and that though there are artifacts, they are few, and most of the evidence of their existence has been erased. Does that fit in with what you believe?
That fits in. They've either purposely been erased, in my opinion, or else they've been erased due to natural geological changes, including being sunken into the earth underground. And I think most recently we started as human beings being aware of the actuality of these civilizations, not only by seeing things above the surface, such as the Great Pyramids and the unexplained pyramids of Mexico and Central America and South America, and all the beautiful pieces of architecture left behind that really we sit here in awe with, even with today's engineering skills. But when we started, I think, getting into looking underground as far as geological exploration for oil and also subsurface use of space for storage for oil fields and gasoline and food, et cetera, that we started finding a lot of things underground that left even more of a mystery
again,
than what we had above ground.
Again, I've got to stop you for a second, John. It's really interesting that you should be saying that, because there is a project ongoing now in Alaska called HARP.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard of it.
Yes, I have.
And it's supposedly got a dual purpose, and one is to heat up the ionosphere to see what will happen. I'm not sure about that one. And the other purpose, supposedly, is to try and map underground tunnels and caves. And I thought, underground tunnels and caves. Now, why are we wanting to look underground? What do we think is underground that we don't know about?
Apparently, there seems to be more underground that's worth looking at than above our heads in space with the NASA program. I've read about HARP, and I've also looked into the shuttle bay experiments in which they were using ground-probing radar, they said, to help study the Rwandan ape because of the war in Rwanda.
Right.
And that just kind of hit me as kind of funny. And I think that because of today's technology, with the ability to burrow underground with thermal nuclear boring machines that have been patented in U.S. patent books by Los Alamos Laboratories, I know before you had a really great researcher on the air, Richard Sauter, and
That's right.
He's done a lot of studies on this and brought a lot of information forward to the public, declaring that the United States and other countries by now have very easily been able to penetrate the Earth with these thermonuclear boring machines that literally vitrify the rock, and what's left over is about 25% of mass. And since it's molten lava, they compress it towards the tunnel walls, and it permeates through the tunnel walls, creating a self-lined tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
This is great when you look back at a lot of the old stories of people in caves and caverns, even when you're talking about books like Edda Dorfa and other stories like the Smoky Gog, in which people talk about the Hollow Earth. These stories were coming out long before we were even aware of the technology about glass-lined tunnels, and that's exactly what the technology is available today, is to leave glass-lined tunnels behind. And these people were reporting them way back in the last century.
But these are tunnels, John, that we would have created, so we would therefore, for the most part, know they are there, certainly at high government levels. The implication of HARP is that we're looking for stuff that we don't know is there.
Right. Well, if it's very simple in engineering term, due to this technology to be able to burrow underground, then that leaves us a whole new issue. Not only would NORAD have to worry about missiles coming from overhead from the north, and also be able to look out for any kind of missile attack from above, now we've got a whole new issue about how do we prevent other countries or other species from burrowing under the ground into our continent, into the North American country, and coming near sensitive facilities or near sensitive government buildings.
God, there's an awful thought.
So, I mean...
That you're right. I mean, it would have national security implications.
Absolutely.
So now I suddenly understand... Even the alien question or the reptilian question aside, there would be national security reasons. Suddenly it dawned on me.
All the billions of dollars they had spent so far, now they've just figured out that they've only done 50% of their job.
Huh.
So there had to be this large launch into being able to see who and what is underground, at what depth, and who they are. If, as I believe, there are other alien species coexisting here on this planet with us, they want to make sure not that these species are telling them where they are, but they want to be able to make sure of being able to verify themselves exactly who is where. And also, when you start looking at the fact that in 1988 they created a National Cave Resources Act, which prevents people from going into a cave.
That's right.
With a $10,000 fine and 1 year imprisonment for each entry.
That's right. It's supposedly to protect the natural resource of the caves, isn't that correct?
That is correct. There are some caves, absolutely, that have been defaced, but the majority of caves across the United States, most people don't want to go near a cave, you know, because there's a certain amount of superstition and a little bit of spookiness going into a dark, hollowed-out piece of the earth.
Sure, I'm one of them. I wouldn't do it.
I had to overcome that fear due to my own research and looking around.
Now wait a minute. You mean you actually have made some trips?
Yes, I've been into cave systems and also into mines, and I can tell you one thing, that there is certainly, I had to do it because, look, I'm afraid of climbing, I'm afraid of going into a cave, yet I had to confront my fears in order to fulfill my research that I'm doing.
Right.
And believe me, in some instances I've been shaking. I mean, I used to watch people climb a mountain and I think these guys are crazy.
Yeah, I still think that.
You see, then I'm faced with the position of having to go out and learn how to do it myself. But, there's been instances where I've gone into certain caves because I've heard that they are, one instance in particular, it was a reptilian outpost very near Las Vegas. As a matter of fact, Las Vegas has almost overrun it.
Oh, really?
When I went in there, a friend of mine told me that this cave had a steel door down a shaft. It was really an old mine. It had a steel door down a shaft after you went down a vertical pit. So I went in with my friend. In order to get in there, you had to climb, crawl horizontally on your belly for about 20 feet before you could even stand up, because the cave ceiling was right at your back. And then I went in there. Mm-hmm. I looked for this door. It wasn't there. And then I was feeling kind of odd. I scraped my knuckles and my fingernails into the wall because it looked kind of wet. And I could feel mud go underneath my fingernails. I saw like a scrape of mud. But when I retrieved backwards, I thought, well, I have to take a picture because this door isn't here, and I want to be able to show my friend who told me about this. And when I took the picture, I saw a streak of light come up. And I looked down at my hands after I turned my flashlight back on. I looked down at my hands, and there was no mud underneath my fingernail, nor was there any mud on my hands. And when I got the actual photograph developed, there was a streak of light going from the bottom left to the top right, with a huge wall of light underneath it, diffused off to the right-hand side. I have a feeling, and I'm not any technical expert in this area, and it's just my opinion, but I have a feeling that there was holographs at work there. And with the flash of the camera, it was trying to adjust for that instantaneous change of light level, and it couldn't quite do it. And this is one of the recent photographs I have of anomalous activities underground.
By the way, I would give my eye teeth to get hold of one of those photographs, John.
Well, I'll send you a copy.
Oh, you will?
Oh, sure.
All right. I'll tell you, John, I'm right in the middle of writing a book, and I'd be glad to give you credit. So if you want to include permission to publish it, I'll stick it in there.
I don't think there will be a problem.
All right. Wonderful. I mean, I really love being able to get these photographs out. And
absolutely.
I've got a bulletin board system, by the way, where we do that. We take special photographs like the one you're talking about and make them available, so I'll do that as well. Boy, that's fascinating. I don't know if I could have overcome my fear, and I sure don't know that I could crawl through a space just barely big enough for me to crawl through. I wouldn't like that at all. Earth above, earth below, earth to each side. There's something about that that would be very claustrophobic.
It is a little bit of something to overcome.
Yeah.
But one thing is, I've realized through doing all the research that I have, is that the old phrase from, I think it's out of the Bible, that says, as above, so below, it really does encounter pretty much the question of the UFO phenomenon.
All right, what is it that you believe is down there, John?
Well, when I started thinking about, the one question that really started narrowing me into my field of research, which was primarily getting into the reptilian area, which is I started questioning as to why is it that the majority of contactees who meet the Nords and who meet these other wonderful beings from craft, are told that they have some sort of a non-interference clause where they're not
That's
allowed
right.
to interfere with us. Yet at the same time, through that contact, there was a form of interference, but not on the scale of which the grays, what you see now is the grays, the 4 foot, 4.5 foot tall, you know, standard gray, which is the alien with the large black eyes and the thin extremities and the large head. Why is it that they, along with less frequent but still reports of contacts with them and the reptilian beings who have been reportedly been the ones giving them orders or commanding them, why is it that these two particular species have repeatedly been talked about in the field? What gives them the right where others do not have the right to interfere with us, even when they're talking about doing the experiments with people on craft, as they do? And that started making me look more into our own historical perspective as to what is there left, what's really left of our own history that hasn't already been hidden or just naturally lost that could explain to us the existence of these beings. Number one is, when you look at the grays, the oldest reference I can find to anything that's like a gray is that the Hopi Indians refer to these grays as ant people.
Ant people.
And from our own visual perspective now, we can see why they would maybe refer to them as ant people. Say, for instance, what if this being came from underground, or you had knowledge that they lived underground?
Mm-hmm.
They had large eyes, as do ants, thin extremities, as do ants, large cranium, as do ants. And, of course, now we can understand that they might have just said, well, this is an ant person. You know,
or it would be their easy reference, yes.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Sure.
And
you're right about the features. When you consider an ant, those similarities are quite striking. John, hold on just a second. We'll be right back to you. My guest is John Rhodes, and now I'm beginning to make a bit of the connection myself. How about you? I couldn't quite understand the human-reptilian connection. But I'm beginning to get there, I think. More in a moment. John, question for you. An obvious question somebody would ask would be, well, if they're reptilian and they are from, in essence, below Earth, then what are the UFOs? In other words, what's the connection? Are they actually some previous race of humans, or are they from somewhere else occupying our inner ground?
Well, that's a good question. Let me explain this. First of all, I started noticing that I believe that they are a species that are off the original trunk or the tree of life, the first genetic creation that took part on this planet. And this may or may not be so, but this is, from what I've been able to gather, this is my perspective. And we are further genetic chains or genetic branches off that original trunk.
In a process, John, of evolution or creation or both, or do
I think,
you not?
I think it's both. I think originally it was divine creation, and then shortly after that there was intervention of sorts. And when I started, what really clued me in on this is starting to look at the antiquity of the serpent and serpent worship around the world. There is no animal on Earth that has been revered so highly and taken both ends of the spectrum, whether it's negative or positive, into the influence of man and his religion, than that of the serpent or the snake.
That's true. That's true.
You can also include in that category dragons, lizards, and any of the reptilian species, but primarily the serpent, the snake, and or the dragon.
John, are there not some religions, it strikes me, back in the Appalachian Mountains, particularly Christian religions, serious thumper religions, where they use a snake as a demonstration of how they can overcome, and I hesitate to use the word evil, I don't know if evil is right, but overcome something or another, and they use them in religion.
Yeah, they dance with the snakes and they tempt them almost to bite them.
That's right, as though you cannot harm me.
Right, and through their own faith in God, they think that once they are bitten, that they'll survive. And in fact, when many people, when they're bitten, do in fact swell up, you know, because of the venom.
Right.
But yes, the serpent actually exemplifies both the positive and negative religious implications We look at, first of all, the Japanese and the Chinese revere the serpent or the snake as and the dragon as being something very benevolent, while at the same time mm-hmm. we're told through our own religions that the being who stood in the Garden of Eden, and remember, it was the only reference in the Holy Bible that we could even talk to animals, was that of a reptilian. And this reptilian was smart enough to start teaching us. And when you look at the connections between the Sumerian text talking about Enlil, or E, having been a divine being from an extraterrestrial being who was involved with the genetic manipulation of man, and he lived in a place called Snake Marsh, and he was the one that had taken a branch of the mammalian man and mixed it with some of the reptilian being. And the place where he lived, of course, was Snake Marsh, like I said, but you could think of a place where snakes live as a den. And then we come back to looking at the biblical explanation in Genesis where they talk about the reptilian being in a place called Eden and giving man knowledge.
Eden. Yeah.
Right, Eden. And these types of little pieces of information are all over the place, and it's just a matter of being able to make the connection. I believe that one reason that it's really interesting to note that amongst many of the religious cultures of the world, it's a common rule or law, religious law, that they are not allowed to draw or make anything of that which is in heaven.
All right, John, we've got to pause here at the top of the hour.
Okay.
We'll be back. Relax for a few moments. Eden, that's... boy, that's quite a jump, huh? A little emphasis, but big meaning. We'll be right back.